Paul Ross. Now, my friends on TalkSport and Talk, that remarkable Nobel Prize-winning German author Thomas Mann once said that in the 20th century, the destiny of man was expressed in political terms. Fair enough, I thought. That was until a couple of years ago when I read a brilliant book by another fine German writer, Ronnie Blaschke. That was called Power Players, Football in Propaganda, War and Revolution. A brilliant read. It charts how sports has become inextricably intertwined with politics and people, can be an agent of social change, can be a control agent. And now the multi-award-winning author, Herb Blaschke, has another great book, another must-read volume called Football and Racism. Now that, you might think, is a fairly well-trod path for journalists. But you'd be wrong, because this book is subtitled How Colonialism Shaped the Modern Game, and if ever the inoperable tumour that is racism is to be blasted out of the body of football, everyone should read this book. And I'm delighted to say Ronnie Blaschke joins us now from Germany. Good morning, Ronnie. Thank you for doing this for us, sir.
Good morning. Hello. Thanks for having me.
Now, it's a fascinating read, this, because it's pretty much a global examination of football, but also racism in football, and those countries where some people weren't even... I mean, in India, for example, I didn't know until I read your book, the British colonial powers didn't even allow the Indians to start their own football teams, even though we introduced them to the game.
Yeah, that's true. This was important to me because in the UK, but in Germany, where I live as well, we do talk about racism for many years now, maybe 30 or 40 years. But I rather find the discussion superficial, and we never really ask where the roots of the racism. So my motivation was to trace it back to colonialism, because that is for centuries colonialism, especially in the UK, but Portugal, France, dominated society, and in Germany, but in other countries as well, we look with admiration to England, the birthplace of football. But how could football become a global sport? We never really think about this. And I went to India, to Kolkata, former capital of British India, and it was interesting to describe it with the example of India. For the British sailors, soldiers, mercenaries, they came in the 19th century. They were maybe missing London, missing their home, and they played football. But they didn't allow the Indians to join. So the Indians were not allowed to have their own football clubs for many decades. So at the beginning of football, there was violence, there was power structure, there was discrimination. So football without colonialism would have not been a global game so quick.
You also make the point how quickly some countries, Portugal you mentioned for example, were to recruit players from their former colonies. Like Eusebio played for Benfica when Man United beat them to win the European Cup, but he was of course he would not be regarded, I think, these days as a naturalized Portuguese citizen.
Right, Portugal, this small, cute, wonderful country southwest of Europe. Many people don't know that Portugal was responsible for 2/3 of the transatlantic slave trade. So the Portuguese Empire was built on racism, on slavery, and the Portuguese Empire recruited cheap footballers in former colonies, Mozambique, Angola, Cape Verde, and the most prominent example was Eusebio. And when Eusebio, the player of the century in Portugal, died a few years ago, I was at the Museum of Benfica Lisbon, where he played his career. Most of the articles described Eusebio again, this very humble, poor little boy from Africa. He made it because of football. He made goals, and he deserved the Portuguese citizenship. So this is already a very almost racist description of a player that was only allowed to be successful because of football. And in France, in Portugal, in the UK, in Germany, we very often say integration because of football. That's not true. It's integration because of success.
Yeah.
When players like Benzema, Marcus Rashford, Mesut Özil, when they're successful, we are happy for them. But when they're not successful, or when they try to be political, then they are very often criticised and even discriminated against.
And I do wonder whether that lies behind some of the very vituperative, very hostile criticisms Marcus Rashford's been under fire from. People say he's not been playing, he's not been tracking back, he's not been putting enough energy into it. But I wonder whether, in part, there's a displaced anger in his social campaigning, for example, to make sure that children have enough to eat before they go to school, that kind of thing. And somehow there's a resentment that who's this person who's a person of colour to lecture us about how we raise our children?
Yeah, we do have this in other countries as well. I just had a lecture in Germany today where we talked about the political responsibility of football players. And when they are successful and we do things like Rashford supporting marginalized people in Manchester, then they're celebrated. But when they're not that successful on the pitch, then many fans are asking, do you really have to do that politically? Maybe you should be concentrated more on sports. And there's all the sometimes this racist undertone. But generally speaking, about footballers and athletes being active against racism, kneeling down or showing the red card against racism, very often we put the responsibilities just on the black players, right? Sometimes we hand over the responsibility to the victims. And I know I'm a white journalist. I never have to fear because of racism, but we should say something. And very often in Germany, for example, Antonio Rüdiger, Özil, rarely were they supported by their white players because maybe, I don't know, maybe their agents, they are saying don't emphasize too
Well, you
much
make the point
politically. It could cost us some
that
fans, but
Pele never really kind of stood. I mean, obviously, he was against racism, and his genius meant that probably he had an easier path than some black people, but actually, he must have experienced it. But you make the point that maybe because of worries about his career, he didn't really make a huge stand, a big song and dance about it.
yeah, Pelé maybe was a different case because this was like 60s,
Sure.
70s, and back then it was a military dictatorship in Brazil, and this is the racism in Brazil, for example, even though they did not have, as the US, segregation in law, or as South Africa, apartheid. Brazil was always emphasizing we are proud to have not, we don't have these laws, and look,
The
we have
colorblind,
Pelé. Yeah, we have Pelé, the most successful Brazilian is black. How can we be racist? Yeah, as an illusion as well. But Pelé, for example, if he would have said something against racism, probably he would have ruined his career early on. So I don't know. I don't want to judge
I
him.
mean, it may have
But
been people have thought he
nowadays,
was ungrateful, I think, had he said it. That would be unfair because he's allowed to say what he believes. But I think there was that sense in which they were very keen to promote themselves as a rainbow nation of equality. Whereas, as you point out in the book, there was a feeling that, okay, black people, black Brazilian people, great footballers, maybe great entertainers, great showbiz, weren't really organised enough to get into politics to be seen at a political level, which again is arrant nonsense.
and this is one very important point of the book. It's not only about the visible racism, the loud racism, the chants in the stadium. It's about that we, for example, in the media, in merchandising, in PR, we very often emphasize the physicality, the body, and don't even see that, for example, diverse teams on the pitch, yes, but look at the stands in Liverpool, in London, in Munich, in Dortmund, very diverse cities, but it's not reflected at all on the stands, and even worse, in the boards, in the media, referees. I heard, I think in 150 years of top football in England, just 8 or 9 black referees. This is like
Or managers and
a
coaches, for
huge
example.
scandal.
Managers and coaches, and both
True,
of those.
true.
And what I love about your books, I've only read the two of them that are written in English, Ronnie. This is Ronnie Blaschke we're talking to. His latest book, Football and Racism, is out now from Pitch. It's not a dry dissertation. It's not a dry history of racism in football. You find a way into it through human stories and stories of the clubs. For example, I had no idea until I read your book that 2,000 black people were murdered by the Germans, by the Nazis, in concentration camps.
I did not know that as well. So, and because in Germany we talk, of course, about the Jewish players and officials that were killed by the Nazis, but there were like 2,000 black people as well killed by the Nazis. And I found one black footballer who was very successful
Mr.
in the
Heinz Kurtz, I think
1920s
his
and
name was, wasn't he?
19.
There's a photograph of him, Heinz
He,
Kurtz.
yeah, very German name, and he was black. He was the son of a French soldier in Germany, and he was a very successful German footballer. But when the Nazis came into power, he came into a concentration camp. He survived, and what did he do after World War II? I mean, he could have gone everywhere, right? But he returned to the very same city where people wanted to kill him, and he became a very successful coach, and he was very integrated into the community. And this is a very interesting biography, and I think we should research more about these biographies because they were very often not talked about. Sources were deleted, and this is German history too.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
great, great player.
I wanted to, if I may, probably for another few minutes, is I wanted to ask you about two specific chapters in the book. One which might surprise people, but I found it really fascinating, was your chapter on Namibia and the kind of way the country, you know, the economic problems faced by the country and the way that sport was kind of introduced there, football introduced there, and it kind of has developed, but how it might have been without a colonial authority is a fascinating question, I think, in the book.
It is interesting. Namibia was our colony, German colony. First genocide of the 20th century
Yeah.
happened in Namibia, and football was very long segregated between black and white and so-called color leagues, so very drastic segregation. And this is the interesting question. Namibia was the country on the African continent with the last independence in 1990, and then the country nowadays, almost 40 years into independence, is one of the most unequal states in the world. And we can talk about this in India and other former colonies, long time after the British people, for example, left. The consequences will be there for a very long time. And it's hypothetical, right? How would India look? How would Namibia look? How would Brazil look if the colonial powers never would have arrived? But yeah, it's a question we will not get a certain answer on.
And the last chapter's about the USA, about Los Angeles in particular, and it seems that diversity, equality, and inclusion does not function in the world of sport, or you might think it would almost be effortlessly applied.
Yeah, Los Angeles, very interesting with the debate at the moment, Donald Trump, where he tries to declare migration as the biggest problem, and Los Angeles, and especially the football
Yeah.
in California, would be unthinkable without the Latinos, without the Mexican influence. Very diverse, interesting fan culture was at the Derby of Los Angeles, but in the US, football is very expensive. Youth football, people can't really afford it, and so the national team of men and women, relatively white, so the opposite of what we see in Europe, the
Yeah.
stands are diverse. But the national team's not that much. And yeah, I hope that the World Cup 2026 gives us a chance to discuss about this. At least in football, the US and Mexico are very much intertwined.
It's a fantastic read, folks. Seriously, it's called Ronnie by Ronnie Blaschke. It's called Football and Racism: How Colonialism Shaped the Modern Game. I also urge you to get hold of a copy of a previous book of Ronnie's called Power Players: Football in Propaganda, War and Revolution. Also, a brilliant way into 20th century history as well. And Ronnie Blaschke was our special guest this morning because it's our book of the week here on Talksport and on Talk, published by Pitch. It's Football and Racism, and we're live till 5.